I'd like to welcome those joining us on Facebook Live today as we tape my new podcast. I'm with John Hoffmeister today. We're good friends, old friends. John retired as president of Shell Oil in 2008 and founded Citizens for Affordable Energy, which promotes sound U.S. energy and environmental security solutions for the nation. He's a thoughtful, well-versed, outspoken expert on energy challenges globally. John, welcome.
Thank you, Boone. It's good to see you today. You're looking well.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess we got our challenges, don't we, on the energy patch?
Well, we do have. We've seen this happen before.
Yeah, I mean,
everything falling the tank, and but this one's pretty tough.
People don't remember that in 1997 we saw $10 oil.
I remember.
It wasn't that long ago.
You know? If you were selling oil, you should remember it.
Yeah, you should. I was in Shell in those days, and boy, it was tough. We laid off tens of thousands of people back then. But the good news is we recovered. It took about we will on this one.
Yeah.
In fact, you think the recovery is underway?
Oh yeah, 2619, it was the bottom, and I believe that was January. We then went back and tested it again. So I'm satisfied 2619 was the bottom.
Yeah, I think it was too. What I'm actually feeling now is that the cutbacks that have taken place, particularly the big capital cutbacks by the majors, is going to mean that the recovery will be long and it will be robust, and I think we'll get back to some pretty high prices for oil.
Now I've got to ask you, pretty high prices. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that before the end of the year, we'll be pushing $80 a barrel. And I think as we get into 2017, we could probably see getting close to $100 a barrel. I think that we're going to be so short, because what we've done is we've trained a whole nother generation how much fun it is to drive their cars with low-priced oil. So demand is up in this country. We're up 3-4%
Car sales are up too.
Car sales are up.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about all these millennials that don't want cars. Well, that's until they get married. That's until they get into life where they realize.
Until they have kids.
That's right. When, you know, traveling is a way of life in this country. We love mobility. But more importantly, India is growing like gangbusters. China hasn't stopped growing on the consumption of oil. And you get the whole continent of Africa, which also wants to be using oil. So I think for the next 10, 20, 30 years, we're going to see robust demand for oil. And that whole crowd out there that says keep it in the ground, they're going to be pretty disappointed, because we're not going to keep it in the ground.
Well, you're now. The world is using 95 million barrels of oil a day. And China is, their production is down. And, you know, India doesn't have much production, but tremendous demand. And you look around the world you don't have, drilling has pretty well stopped around the world.
Yeah.
You have, you know, everybody's so proud of Iraq and what was going to happen there. And now we find out the fractured limestone in the northern part of the country is not anything like they thought it was.
Right.
And so it's headed down. You've got Venezuela, you got Nigerian problems, and you don't have any rigs running in the United States.
And Libya is not doing anything, and Syria is broken. So I think the odds against oversupply are being reduced almost by the day.
I agree. 100% agree.
But I would go further out on a limb. I would say that as the world consumes more oil, we'll never have enough oil for everybody, and that we've got to have natural gas as a transportation fuel. You've been outspoken on natural gas.
And you have too.
Where are you today on natural gas as a transportation fuel?
Well, you know, it's no question. It's cleaner.
Yeah.
It's cheaper.
Yeah.
And the United States has more natural gas than any other country.
That's right.
And so it's it is going to happen. And usually, you know, when you get tired of something, waiting on it and everything else, when you really get tired of it, that's when it moves.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you finally, you know, it ain't going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen.
What do you think's holding it back? Why
never aren't had we... a champion.
Yeah.
One. And we've had those that are producing fertilizer, plastics, and have the ethanol subsidy. There are those companies around. They do not want to compete with natural gas.
That's true.
So they don't want the demand for natural gas to go up. But it's going to happen, though.
Yeah, yeah. And how about geopolitics? Do you think we're still suffering from geopolitics on oil?
We will always suffer with geopolitics.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, I do. But I think for the people watching us on Facebook, maybe we could go a little bit deeper into that. What does that look like? And I'm happy to start. It looks to me like the Saudis, who are arguably producing more and more oil, and the Russians, who are keeping up with the Saudis, they're both going to go bankrupt if they keep producing so much oil.
Well, when you look at the crash, and we went down to 2619, that when you went down that low, who did it hurt most? Well, I think there's no question the Saudis wanted to hurt the domestic, our domestic industry. Okay, they did. We went from 1,609 rigs drilling for oil down to 342. So we took 1,300 rigs out of the market. And it really killed our industry temporarily. Okay, now what did it do? Who else got hurt? The Saudis, the Russians, all of OPEC, and that's it. But the United States consumer was given a great bonus in cheap gasoline.
Some estimate about $25 billion bonus.
Yes.
For cheap gasoline, just in 1 year.
That's right, and it's still going on.
Right.
But you have bottom in February, the second time, 2619 for oil, and you're back up to $48.
Right, but just to be clear to the people listening, when the Saudis and the Russians try to make a go of it on cheap oil, oil is the primary revenue source for their government. And they're bringing in less and less money the more they produce per barrel. And the consequence of that is they can't pay their bills.
Well, they can't feed their people.
Right.
And that is a big concern, because right. when you can't, particularly in Saudi Arabia, I mean, you're going to, you have over 50% of the people that are not working.
Right.
So here the Saudis, when they say they have to have $90 a barrel to balance the budget, that's probably a true statement.
I'm sure it's true.
I hear from a congressman in Washington says, well, they can produce for $5 a barrel. Get out of here. You don't know what they have to pay for.
That's right. They're paying all the costs of government, or almost all the costs. Plus, they're paying to import a lot of people into their country to do the work. Because a lot of, as you said, the Saudis don't do the work.
They don't want to work.
They don't want to work. And they're getting a stipend from the government just to live.
And they will continue to get that.
Right.
Because when the people decide to overthrow the government, it'll be just like it was in Iran when they took the Shah out.
Right. But what's amazing is that when the price goes down, the way the U.S. system works, our government really doesn't lose money.
Oh.
They make money because we're selling more gasoline, and they get the sales tax on the extra sales of the gasoline.
Sure.
Plus the royalty doesn't drop. They get the royalty, whether it's $26 or $96, the U.S. government still gets the royalty.
But, of course, that goes down. The royalty goes down.
Yeah.
But it
doesn't disappear.
No, it doesn't disappear. But, and again, who you hurt in the United States is a rather small group of people compared to the rest of the United States, and everybody believes they're overpaid anyway.
Right.
So you don't find much sympathy when all goes to $26.
Now, I have a bugaboo on the next question.
Okay.
We still import 7 million barrels of oil a day. Mm-hmm. And we've laid off a couple hundred thousand oil workers. The estimate for those 1,300 rigs that have gone down, roughly 100 people per rig, when you look at the whole supply chain.
200,000 people.
200,000 people gone. But we're still importing 7 million barrels a day. What do you think it's going to take to shift to where we actually can take care of ourselves and not have to import that oil? Or how do you feel about
that? Well, you could cut half of the 7 million barrels imported. You could cut it out by taking natural gas to the heavy-duty trucks in this country.
Right.
There are only two fuels, you and I both know, that are going to move the heavy truck, the 18-wheelers. Is going to be diesel or natural gas.
Right.
And natural gas is half the price of diesel.
Right.
So when you have the leadership in Washington that says, let's move to domestic, cleaner, cheaper for heavy-duty trucks, that could be instantaneous. What you could do instantaneous, it'll take you 3-4 years for the trucks to move out of diesel and to natural gas.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. You hit the nail on the head by saying, if you had the leadership in Washington.
Hmm.
Now, you and I have been around a long time. Have we ever had leadership in Washington for energy in your memory?
I don't think they ever have understood energy. Because today you have an energy department. Who is it that made a decision on the XL pipeline?
Well, it was the White House.
The State Department.
State Department and the White House.
And then White House.
Right.
Okay. And who is it that makes a decision when you export oil?
Right.
The Commerce Department. Yeah. And so.
And who is it that gives the leases out? The Interior Department.
Interior Department, right.
It's all broken up into segments. Yeah, nobody really runs energy.
But we know one. That's right. Nobody runs energy.
Right.
So you should have a department that is, you know, is the Energy Department and makes the energy decision. Of course, always the White House gets to sign off on them.
Right.
But you know what the Energy Department focuses on is nuclear.
Nuclear, right.
Yeah. One of the energy secretaries several years ago said, if you think the Energy Department makes energy decisions, you're wrong.
Right.
But it says 75%, he was a former secretary, 75% of my time is spent on nuclear.
Right.
And so, all right, you have, and I have a question for you, but tell me what three things that you would recommend to the administration coming in November for energy?
For energy? Number one, we have to operate together as an alliance in North America, Canada, U.S., Mexico, to do what's right for North American markets.
All right, so you want to get off that 7 million barrels.
I want to get off the 7 million barrels because all it does is buy us more trouble. It makes us vulnerable to OPEC, vulnerable to the geopolitics of the Middle East or any other part of the world that we don't control. But in North America, my goodness, we have the North American Free Trade Agreement. We have contiguous borders between Canada and U.S. and Mexico. We go back and forth all the time. And why we don't operate collectively as three countries with common resources is a mystery to me.
All right.
That's number one.
All right. That would be the North American Energy Alliance.
Right.
Okay. And that could that come under North American Free Trade Agreement?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Because we're moving product. The Mexicans would like our natural gas. I just saw today approval of a $3.6 billion pipeline to take U.S. gas to Mexico.
And what? That's a new pipeline.
New pipeline.
Right now we're sending them 2 billion a day.
Yeah, we're already shipping a lot of natural gas there. They have a lot of oil. So bring their oil to our refineries on the Gulf Coast. Now, they also need help producing more oil because they run out of technology. Their big issue is technology, and only the American companies could help them in the Gulf of Mexico with the technology that we know in this country that could help Mexico.
Okay, now that the the Mexicans do not want any ownership of their minerals. Right. Now, they've said they're going to do some things and all, but the acreage they put up for bid, nobody was interested.
Correct.
I don't think, let them keep their minerals.
Yeah.
If we help them,
right,
they can repay us.
They can pay us, yeah.
Sure, because we can find, or help them find, their technology is not as good as ours.
Right.
And that we can help them find oil, and what we increase their oil production, they could pay us back,
yeah,
for our costs.
Yeah.
So we could help them and not even ever take any part, right, of their minerals ownership.
But then the second thing I would do, I would start moving towards more natural gas, not just for trucks, but for personal vehicles as well.
Okay.
Pickup trucks, SUVs, regular sedans, and I would turn natural gas into liquids.
Okay.
CNG is fine, compressed natural gas is fine, but for a vehicle like a passenger car, you probably need too much tank space for the natural gas. So turn the natural gas into a liquid. Ethanol, methanol, we know how to do that. We've been using methanol.
But don't turn corn into ethanol.
Well,
use natural gas for ethanol.
Yeah, or even both. I mean, I got nothing against the corn farmers there, but I think the market is so big, and to get rid of that 7 million barrels a day, that would take almost 30 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day.
Right.
30 billion cubic feet of more natural gas means we got to get back to drilling natural gas if we were to supply.
And today we're producing what, 75 billion?
75 total. So that would take us over 100 billion cubic feet a day, which is probably 3 million jobs by the time you add it all up.
That's right.
You add up all the additional drilling, you add up all the manufacturing to turn that natural gas into fuel, you create the fuel distribution system, you put natural gas tanks into every gas station. You know, that's a whole lot of work there that would last for years and years. And okay, we'd be putting people to work. So that's choice for fuels, that's number two. Number three, I think I would somehow, and this might take a miracle, beyond our capacity, it might take help from above. Politicians gotta stop thinking like politicians when it comes to energy in this way. Energy time takes 30 years. Political time takes 2 years. When you're trying to do something in energy time, like open up a whole new field in the Arctic, open up a whole new section of the Gulf of Mexico, open up the shale in different parts of the country, produce the natural gas for fuel, those are 30-year projects.
But you're not asking for subsidies.
Nothing, not a penny. Just asking the politicians, quit thinking in two-year cycles. They think in two-year cycles because that's all they have. It's all about their careers. Stop thinking about your career and think about Americans and consumers of energy, and let the consumers of energy carry the day.
Okay. A point here. We have the cheapest energy in the world.
Yeah.
The United States does. Rebuild the economy on the back of cheap energy. Cheap energy will trump cheap labor.
That's right, it will.
Yeah.
And what we were starting to do with shale was exactly that. Because the shale revolution was bringing cheap energy to the consumer. And then we started to get shut down, didn't we? Because you got New York State will not allow fracking. You got a couple of other states that are trying to carve out sections of the state.
Well, no, California fracking. Doesn't want fracking.
California doesn't want it, except offshore. You notice that?
Sure.
They allow fracking offshore, but not onshore. And then we got this terrible decision on the Keystone XL pipeline. You know,
we're going to get another chance, Dan.
We will, but it took 7 years to say no. Have you ever in your life taken 7 years to decide anything? I mean, you make decisions in the day. You study something.
I'm not the same guy that made that decision.
I know.
But I mean, but he didn't. He's against fossil fuels.
Yes. Keep it in the ground, right?
Yep.
And have you ever heard anything more foolish than keeping fossil fuels in the ground?
No. And we have more fossil fuels in the United States than the rest of the world.
Yeah. So why don't
and
we?
And you're going to have fossil fuels. You and I both know.
Yeah.
For the next 50 to 100 years.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Now we've had questions come in to us.
Yeah, we have from your fan club out there. I think several of them are pretty similar. They want to know, when will we see increases in drilling? And how fast and how furious will that be?
I think, you know, you're now $48 oil, $60 oil, you'll get rigs back to work. How many? We're $342 now. You'll pick up 100, 200 rigs by the time you get to 60.
Okay. And production is declining, we know that. How many rigs would it take to stop the decline in production?
Probably you'll have to double 342.
Double from where we are.
Yeah.
Just to get even.
Yeah, just...
Just to stay even.
Right.
Right.
And I'm not even sure you can double and get it. It may take more than that.
Yeah.
But we do have, you know, some great properties to develop in this country.
Here's one about Venezuela. What do you make of Venezuela? And how long can they keep going at the rate they're going?
They may make it till 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. It's coming up soon.
Yeah.
I mean, it is coming up.
Yeah.
And you've had all of the companies you and I have worked with, the service companies, they've pulled out of there.
They pulled out because they're not getting paid.
They're not getting paid.
Right.
And they can't go on not getting paid.
Right.
I don't know any industry that can do that.
No.
So I think Venezuela is about the end of the trail.
Yeah. Will we see $5 natural gas anytime soon?
I said that to Johnny Armel, who is an expert on natural gas.
Yeah, he is. He is, yeah.
And I said, Johnny, yeah, will I ever see $6 a barrel, $6 a thousand for natural gas? He said, I know how old you are, Boone. I don't think you'll see $4.
Really?
That's what he said.
We have that much gas.
And we have that. And I think you will see, yes, over $4. But I don't think you're going to have it run away, and I don't think it can, it will.
If we
always know natural gas is a weather mark.
But if we put it in our cars and trucks.
Oh, wait, different deal.
Different deal.
But still cheap.
Still much cheaper than oil.
That's right.
Even at $48.
Let's give parity on oil right quick. But $50 oil is $8 natural gas.
Right, yes.
And so you're a long way from $8.
Right, so we'd have even less expensive fuel to go enjoy holidays and vacations and go see the USA.
And it's cleaner.
And it's cleaner.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that because we've shifted to so much natural gas in our electricity generation, that we now have greenhouse gas emissions equal to about 1992.
Oh, I know.
Which is pretty remarkable.
It's cleaner than any place else in the world.
That's right.
Got more energy and a cleaner atmosphere than any place else in the world.
Right. There's another one that asks, can you compare the 1980s oil depression to today?
Yes, sure.
Which was worse?
80s.
80s was worse?
Yes, but we, since 1980, five times we have dropped over half the price of oil. Five times. Four times the Saudis would show up as swing producer and they would cut production to stabilize the price. And consequently, it would turn and come back up.
Yeah.
This time, the United States became the swing producer. And consequently, and the Saudis have continued to produce. But I think you and I probably agree, the Saudis and the Russians have to do something on. They've got to cut the production. They do.
Or they'll turn into Venezuela.
That's right.
Because they can't pay their bills. Yeah, the depression, well, for two years in a row, the Russian economy has sunk about 6% per year. And they're not a consumer goods exporting country.
They're actually a poor country.
Yeah. I mean, they don't export vehicles the way Japan or Korea does. They don't. I mean, would you buy a Russian car?
I don't know anybody buy a Russian car.
Do you wear a Russian suit? Do you watch Russian movies?
Only thing they have are three assets. They have the oil and gas,
right,
which is number one. Two is vodka. and they drink that. They don't export much vodka. Okay, and the third one is the caviar. And if anybody's had caviar once, they don't go back for another helping. So the only thing they have is oil and natural gas.
Right, right. So we haven't talked about politics. Is politics on your mind at all?
Yes, you bet. Like everybody. Like everybody. What do you think?
You know, I was so concerned even a year ago that I called up a friend of mine who's a very high-powered Democrat. And I said, what I'm hearing from the Democratic candidates is pretty darn scary in terms of this country's energy future. He begged me, hold off. Please don't make any decisions during the primaries, because the primaries are not the real world of politics. I've heard terrible things about energy from the Democratic candidates. I've heard almost nothing from the Republican candidates, because gas is cheap, energy is not on their minds. So I'm very worried. I'm very worried about the future of energy relative to what's been happening so far this campaign season.
Well, energy will be an issue in the general campaign. I'm not sure Hillary makes it to on your mark, get set, bang, go. So if she does or doesn't, but we know what she wanted, and she's been very clear. She wants to cut out all fossil fuels.
Yeah.
I'd love to debate her on that issue.
Right.
But, and you would too.
Oh, because I'd love to debate the current president as well on fossil fuels.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, he's gone. He's not going to be there for the debate. But the thing about it is that if you're and cut out fossil fuels, I ask when this question comes up to both of us from audiences or people from time to time, is, you know, I say, okay, cut it out. What are you going to use?
Right.
And then they'll say, well, we'll use renewables. We'll use the wind and solar. Well, neither one of them run cars or trucks.
Right.
Trucks especially. And so you've got to have an alternative if you're going to cut out fossil fuels, which there's no alternative.
And the thing they forget, because they always say, well, we can use wind and solar to make electricity for batteries for vehicles. Well, good luck on truck batteries for hauling.
Well, you can't.
You can't.
If you have a battery big enough to run an 18-wheeler, the trailer for the battery would be as big as an 18-wheeler.
That's right. Yeah. And it'll weigh more than the truck engine can pull.
Right. So,
and with the vehicles, you got 250 million vehicles in America, just in America today, and how many batteries would that take? We can't make the batteries to replace oil and gas.
And they're not easy to get rid of either.
That's right. And they're a messy problem to get rid of because of what's in them. You know, if you're worried about the quality of the rivers and the quality of the ocean with all of the other fossil remnants, batteries are going to be a pretty polluting substance, where the chemicals are going to run off into rivers and out of the waste dumps, and they're going to be a problem to work with.
Well, John, it's been interesting, but one thing, you and I know the business. We know the energy business. So we have it analyzed pretty clearly.
Right.
I don't think nobody's going to want to debate either one of us on the subject. But if they turn it over to us, we can fix energy in America.
It'd be cheaper, cleaner, and more of it.
That's right, John.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.